So let's talk a minute about what we're going to be doing the next few weeks. This is kind of our outline for the next few weeks. You can see we're in through March 16th. We're in the book of Genesis, chapter 12. I've got 2 weeks after that that I don't have anything on the schedule yet. Whether I continue Genesis or pick a couple of chapters to do that, whether I do something different, I'm not sure. But on the 6th is the Sunday after I have the heart ablation. So Wade is going to teach for me that Sunday. He's been on hold the last 3 or 4 weeks waiting for that date to come to pass. So hopefully this one works. He'll be here to teach. Then of course we're at Palm Sunday and Resurrection Sunday, and we will do separate lessons for each one of those. So I'm not sure what we're going to do March 23rd to March 30th. I've got a couple of ideas. I don't necessarily want to start another lesson, another book, and then have to skip 3 or 4 weeks before we pick it back up. So I may do something fairly short there. And if you have any ideas, let me know. I know some of you are gonna, I don't know what you're gonna say, but you can say it anyway.
You could do Jude.
Jude, that's one lesson.
What do you do?
Do it twice?
Yeah.
For the slow learners, I'll do Jude twice. Yeah, Philemon and Philemon. Yeah, I could do that too. So let me give you kind of an update on where we are in the Middle East. And this is not long, but there's not a lot of activity right now going on in the war area, except for the fact that we do see a lot of, well, the first phase of the ceasefire with Gaza is over. It was over yesterday. They're trying to get an extension on phase one to get more hostages back. The Hamas does not want to do that. They want to go to phase two because they want Israel out of Gaza. Israel is not going to get out of Gaza. So we're kind of a stalemate right now. So I'm not sure where that's going to go. In the next 3 or 4 days, we ought to get some clarification. What Israel has said is that the new plan put forward by the U.S. is a plan to extend phase one, and they're going to operate on that plan. And even if Hamas doesn't, they're going to operate on that plan, which means they're not pulling out. The other thing they did was they stopped the food shipments because they've sent about 700 trucks into Gaza. Food warehouses are absolutely full. So there's no place to store more food because they've got all the food and supplies. So I'm sure that's going to raise a little big stink, but Hamas takes that food and they sell it. So that's part of the way they get their money. So I'm not sure what's going to happen there. There's a lot of other things going on in Israel, though, right now. We have a pretty big set of things going on in Syria and Lebanon. Lebanon has not stopped their Hezbollah from coming down into the area that Israel wants. So Israel is continuing to take action against them, even though they're in kind of a state of a quasi ceasefire. And that looks to be interesting. The other thing that's going on in Syria, if you've read anything about a people group called the Druze are Muslims, but they're not as pure as the other Muslims would like them to be. So they kill them at every opportunity they have. And there's a bunch of them in Israel, and they go into Syria and they go almost to Damascus. And the new Syrian government is trying to take over those areas. And Israel, to my surprise, has basically said, "Don't, or we're coming." So Israel bombed a few areas in Damascus yesterday to slow them down. The Druze have been very friendly to Israel. They're not warmongers. They will fight, but they're not warmongers. And so they have been, they're in the IDF army, so they're supportive of Israel. The biggest problem Israel has right now is not those two. They've got them under control. The biggest problem they have is in what is called the West Bank, or what we would call Judea and Samaria. And that's because the Palestinians there have been encouraged to take up arms and go into Israel. I mentioned last week about the failed bomb attack in the bus, and what it really was a setup for all of the people from Palestine up in that area to come across into East Jerusalem and into Tel Aviv and just create mayhem. And Israel stopped that. Israel's doing They've moved tanks into that area. So my suspicion is we're on the verge of Israel declaring Judea and Samaria to be Israeli territory. And when they do, the Palestinians will squeal. But in effect, Israel controls it anyway. They've given the Palestinians a free run of that area, a lot of it. But all they do is sit back and wait to be able to kill somebody, knife attack or whatever. So I don't know what's going to happen there. The only thing I would tell you is that yesterday, the day before, Secretary of State Rubio released about, I don't know, 500 million, I don't know what the number is, of bunker buster bombs and other deep, heavy munitions to Israel. And they're in Israel now. So I think if Israel wants to take action, they're not going to be held back by a lack of ammunition. So we'll see what happens there. But we're sort of waiting. But it's a tinderbox. I mean, one spark, and it'll be full on. The other thing, of course, is Iran. Iran is very close to a nuclear weapon. They've apparently got enough uranium to make two or three of them, but they haven't put them together yet. So I think the time is getting short for Israel and the U.S. to do something militarily if they want to do that. I don't know what they're doing, but I think there's a lot of nervousness right now in Iran, and Israel, I think, is on edge too. So we'll see what happens there. And the U.S. side, and all the other things going on, you probably have read the news. The Russia-Ukraine war is not stopping. There was a real missed chance for peace, I think, the other day. We can talk about that if you want to, but I think the President Zelensky of Ukraine has a different view of what the outcome should be. I don't think he's realistic about what position he's in and how much he can fight alone in a war. But I think he'll come around. And I think the telling situation there was when they showed the picture of the ambassador. You see the picture of the ambassador? The Ukrainian ambassador to the U.S. was sitting in the front row with her head in her lap and her hands on her head because it was circling the drain, and she and Rubio are going to have to pick up and move it back, on the table. So,
Do we need continued prayer for President the Lord give peace?
absolutely, absolutely, and I think he's showing great restraint in my mind, more than he ever did in the first term. So I think that's really positive. They've got all this stuff going on with the DOGE, government efficiency, and they've got documents on, the Epstein scandal, JFK assassination, RFK, Martin Luther King. All of that is about to be released, and so there's going to be a lot of angst about that, I'm sure. A lot of people. I see where Bill Clinton's already put out a note saying, "I was on the plane, but I didn't do anything." I thought, yeah, that's really funny. I didn't inhale. So I'm sure there's a lot of other names on that list, and we'll see what happens when those come out. So I think the other thing is, the fraud and abuse and waste is profound when you look at it. Just unbelievable. But that's what happens when nobody watches, and there's so many billions of dollars at stake. People can siphon a little off here and there and send it to their friends, and nobody ever notices. The whole European Union is in an uproar right now. And populace in those countries are making great gains. Populace have kind of taken over Italy. It looks like a populace is going to take over Germany. And when they do, all of this freedom of speech that's been restricted over there is probably going to end. But there's a lot to be played out there. We don't know what it is. And of course, the tariff issue still taking place. So there's a lot of things going on. A lot of things need prayer. Yeah, Don. Right. Don makes the point of with England and the UK, there's a lot of Muslim mayors, not just London, but a lot of other towns there. I noticed the new prime minister, though, is not, he's more on Trump's side, but he's still not totally divorced. He welcomes Zelensky with open arms, but told him he had to get back to the peace agreement. He couldn't blow it off. So we'll see where that all goes. It's going to be interesting to see how that happens and how it works. But I think we're seeing the growing pains of what happens when the world suddenly comes to grips with the fact that things are going to be different, and they're going to have to be different for all of us, you know, to continue and not just, you know, go down the drain. But it's going to be interesting to see how it happens, and God has it under control, so I'm not concerned about that. I just wish I could see the process a little more, a little ahead of time, but I can't. So today we're going to move from chapter 9 to chapter 10 in Genesis. At the end of last week, we talked about commentators assigning traits to the three sons of Noah. And this is just, you'll see it on a chart in a minute, but the oldest son was Japheth, and they consider him the most intellectual brother. The middle son is Shem. They consider him the most spiritual brother. And then the youngest is Ham, and they consider him the most practical and the physical of the brothers, he's a builder, more of a builder. You'll see a little bit of that when we get to chapter 10. So we ended with this chart, and we finished chapter 9. Noah lived 950 years. And then we start chapter 10, and the chapter in my Bible is called the Table of Nations. And this is the account of Shem, Jam, and Shem, Ham, and Japheth. I'll just say it slower. Noah's sons, who themselves had sons and families after the flood. So we're going to look at the genealogies of each of them this week and kind of where they ended up. If you read chapter 10 this week, it's pretty boring. I mean, it's all just genealogies. But if you use that as a framework and look at what it says, it paints a pretty interesting picture for the rest of Genesis and also the rest of end of days, the end of time, the wars that are fought and all that. And I'm not going to do all that today, but I'll point you in a couple of directions. And if we ever go into Ezekiel and do Ezekiel 38 and 39 is the war of Gog and Magog, and we'll take a look at some of these things, how they play out. I'll show you one chart that maybe will help that. So this is what you would consider a table of nations out of Genesis 10. I have a PDF that I'm going to send out. I'm actually going to put it on the website. I'll also send it out, which has a lot more explanation about this, which we can't cover in class, but it'll be out there. But today I'm going to show you some other graphics that help. But if you take a look at this chart, you see some of these names you've never heard of before. I mean, some you have. Of course, Canaan, Aram, remember, you know, one of the sons, I guess, one of the wives of Jacob was from Aram. And Arabia, we see Mirzim, which is really the name for Egypt in the Old Testament, Cush, Lud, Put, a lot of different names. And then up here, Gomer, Magog, Meshach, Elam, which is another name for Persia, Javan, which is the name that is all of the Greek Isles and kind of up into this area. But I'm going to show you some other things about it that will help. So let's start and just look at who these descendants are and where they might have been. So the sons of Japheth, some of your Bibles will have a word that says these are the genealogies of them. The word that's translated genealogies here is a word that is in Hebrew called toledot, and that word could mean sons, could mean genealogies, but it also could be an aggregate term like nations or people groups. So depending on how it's used is what it means. So these are the sons, descendants of Japheth. Now, some of these names, I've bolded them, are pretty familiar to us if we've read other Old Testament books and maybe some of the you know, prophecy books, Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshech, Tira, I believe that's Tira with an A. Move this over here. Tiras. And then we take Gomer and we go down through Gomer And he has Ashkenaz. That's an important one. Rifath and Togarmah. So these are sons, and the reason they're called out is because they're also progenitors of nation areas. And we'll take a look at the map. Some of them have became quite large. Some of them did not become large. Just a thought, Ashkenaz is a term that's generally, have you ever heard of an Ashkenazi Jew, for example? Anybody ever heard of that? So these are the Jews that are, there's two terms, Ashkenaz and Sephardic. Sephardic Jews are the ones that look more Arab. They have more, their skin is darker. Ashkenazi Jews are the ones that came out of Europe. So they're more like Polish or Russian. Israel has got a good mix of both Ashkenazi Jews and Sephardic Jews. Sephardic Jews, a lot of them came out of Spain, you know, when they were pulled back in. So I'm just saying that because it gives you a clue as to where they went. The sons of Javan now, another one, Elisha, Tarshish. You've heard of Tarshish. Tarshish is generally Spain, considered Spain, maybe part of France. The Kittites, you never heard of the Kittites, but the Kittites is Cyprus. The Rodanites or Dodanites are the sons that inhabited the Isle of Rhodes off of Greece. So the Isle of Rhodes is Greeks anyway. Rodanites or Dodanites, you know, all these ites. There's so many ites. You got, yeah, it does sound like a bunch. We haven't heard. There's some worse ones if you get a little further in. And it says the Rodanites and Dodanites and the Kittites, and from these maritime peoples spread out their territories by their clans within their nations, each with its own language. So what you're seeing here is the people that formed the maritime people all around the Mediterranean. You know, that includes the Philistines, it includes Sidon and Tyre, it includes a number of people that were all around that Middle East area, the Phoenicians. But what I want you to take out of this is they not only separated, but they had their own language. So it's not clear whether this is after the Tower of Babel. I think it is. And so all these people are got confused languages, and they begin to move off into their own territory. Because Genesis 10 kind of gives you a sweeping view of many hundreds of years. And then Genesis 11 takes you back in the middle of that, takes you back to, you know, the subject of the Tower of Babel and Nimrod and all that. So we'll kind of look at the big picture, then we'll come back next week and look at something in between in the area of Babylon. So let me just put a slide up here that says this is Japheth. So again, the actual intellectual son, philosophical son. You'll see a verse here that we've already looked at. It says, "God shall enlarge Japheth, who shall dwell in the tents of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant." And of course, we talked about that last week. And what that means is that the sons of Japheth and the sons of Shem will get along so well. They'll live together. They'll exist in the same tents. They'll back each other up. But Canaan won't be that way. Canaan will be more of a servant to all of the brothers. And you can see here, Gomer is Germany, Crimea, Cambria. I don't know where all this is. Ashkenaz is Germany, Saxons, Scandinavia. All of these come out of the Ashkenaz Jews. Carpathians, that is the around the Caucasus Mountains, Romania, that general area. Togarmah, which is Armenians. I'll show you a map later, but the Armenians are the people that are just at the end of Turkey, about where the Mount of where Mount Ararat is, and where the Ark of the Covenant, Noah's Ark landed. And you know, so these are peoples now. They're Azerbaijan, Armenia, Georgia, a number of smaller countries there. And it says, for the most part, Japheth's descendants settled in Europe and Asia Minor. Asia Minor being the area just all around Turkey, up in the across into the what you'd call Europe, and then all around there. You might call them today the stans. There's a lot of stans there, you know, Uzbekistan, Kurdistan, you know, whatever stan. There's a lot of stans there. And so there, a lot of them are Muslim countries today, but this is the descendants of Japheth. The other thing that's interesting is most commentators believe that Shem was the author of these genealogies. I know Noah wrote the book, but the genealogies were probably kept by Shem. And the reason for that is he only has three generations for Japheth and Cush, but he has six generations of his own, Seth. And probably that's because he began to lose touch with them all, where they all went, what they all did. So he didn't write them down. They weren't part of the chosen line anyway. So, but we do get a history, enough history to see what general areas they populated. And so from Genesis perspective, that's really what it was all for. So the sons of Ham, Cush, Egypt, Put, and Canaan. Now, Egypt here is not the land of Egypt, but it's the name of a son. We'll see where he lands. And then it goes into Cush. Cush is Seba, Havilah, Sabta, Remah, and Sabekta, or Sabteka. And you can see sons of Remah are Sheba and Dedan. I put these in because Sheba and Dedan are countries that we've identified on the chart. We know where they are. We know where Havilah is. And some of these others we know where Put is. Put is Libya. We know where Cush is. So and we know where certainly Canaan, the Canaanites were. So let's go on. Cush was the father of Nimrod, which we'll see next chapter, a mighty warrior on earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. That's why it says like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. So a couple of things about Nimrod. Nimrod was obviously a good hunter. They talked about that. But everybody was a good, pretty good hunter then, or they didn't eat because, you know, you had to hunt to eat. And so everybody was a good hunter. So what does it mean to say he's a mighty hunter or a mighty warrior? And most of the commentators believe that's because he was a conqueror. He conquered some of his cousins, took them under his wing, it forced them to come to his side and become part of what turned into Babylon. And so that's why they think he was a mighty hunter and a mighty warrior, because he was a conqueror in that area. And I'm sure he was a pretty good size, imposing figure. You know, we get that idea, but of course we don't have a picture of him or anything. It says the first centers of his kingdom were Babylon, Uruk, Akkad, and Calne. In Shinar. Now, Akkad or Akkad, or however you want to pronounce it, Akkad, in some of the Old Testament books, they talk about a group of people called the Akkadians. The Akkadians were people that lived near Chaldea or Chaldea, however you want to pronounce it, in the area around Babylon. So there's an Akkadian language. That language was very similar to Syriac or very similar to what Jesus spoke, Aramaic. But they're a distinct people, and they were a distinct people back then, probably not so distinct now, but they were at that time. Shinar, I'll show you where that is, but Shinar is the area over in Mesopotamia where people think, you know, the Garden of Eden was, and before the rivers and all that kind of stuff. Then it says from that land, and I'm going to show you a migration chart in a minute, from that land he went to Assyria. Okay, so if you can picture a map, you may not be able to picture maps from that area. I see them all the time. But he goes up towards the coast, like he's going up to the Mediterranean, and that's the area of Assyria. So he goes up there where he built Nineveh. We've heard of Nineveh before, right? Nineveh, that's Jonah's favorite place, Nineveh. It's the modern town of Mosul in Iraq. So Mosul and Nineveh. Nineveh's right outside. Ruins of Nineveh are right outside of Mosul in Iraq. So if you're a Iraq War aficionado, you kind of know where that is. It's in the north. But all of these areas, and then he says, the reason Resen, which is between Nineveh and Calah, which is a great city. So let me show you, well, let me finish him, and then I'll show you the map. I kind of want to flip back and forth. Egypt was the father of the Luddites, the Anamites, the Lehabites, the Naphtuites. You know, it does sound like bugs, doesn't it? The Pathruites and the Kalashites. You'll see Kalashites with a C also. But the Kalashites are where the Philistines came from. So the Philistines were a maritime group of people that inhabited Gaza all the way up the coast of the Mediterranean to about Sidon up in the Lebanon. And then the Jebusites, we know where they were. They were down more in Israel. Archites, Sinites, Arvadites, Zemarites, Hamathites, whatever. I don't know where all these people are. But it says later the Canaanite clans scattered. I'm going to show you the picture of where they scattered. The borders of Canaan reached from the Sidon towards Gerar as far as Gaza, then towards Sodom and Gomorrah, Adama and Zeboiim as far as Lasha. I don't know where any of these places are. I know where Sodom and Gomorrah are. And these are the sons of Ham by their clans, languages, in their territories and nations. So Ham is a builder. And you can look and see the Canaanites, the Egyptians, the Philistines, the Hittites, the Amorites. These are the big people groups. And they all settled in Canaan, which is right where Israel is, Israel and Jordan, Egypt and Africa. So all of his descendants settled in the Middle East and then further west, like into Africa. And Ham is the brother who's the African nations are descended from. So that's where they came from. Yeah, I know. Well, you know, just reading the thing, just reading chapter 10, you don't get an idea of how all these nations happen. I realize it's tough, but I'll try to clear it up. John, thanks for saving me with the question. Of Shem, yes.
So there's a whole lot of descendants of Shem that are not Jews.
Yeah, exactly.
But we've got Ishmael's descendants.
Right.
We've got Esau's descendants.
Yep.
And where are these people from?
I'll show you. So now we move to Shem. Shem is the father of the all the Semite nations. They're all Semites. So sons were born to Shem, whose older brother was Japheth. Shem was the ancestor of all the sons of Eber. Eber is one of the sons down in the list, and Eber is where the name Hebrew came from, because they were the Eberites or Eberu, and so they began to be known as Hebrews. So that's where the descendants of the Jews come from the sons of Eber. Now, we also see where Esau is out of that line as well, and he splits off. But the sons of Shem, Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram. Sons of Aram, Uz, Hul, Gether, Meshech, Arphaxad, father of Shelah, and Shelah, the father of Eber. So I've highlighted these because when you look at the genealogy of the Messiah, there's a set of sons and daughters they go through, and it's important to understand not all of these sons and daughters had the promise of being in the ancestry line of Jesus, but they're all called out, and we can follow them down. One of the maps I'll show you has a little better clarification of that. Two sons were born to Eber. Again, one was named Peleg. Peleg means division. And it says, because in his time, the earth was divided. Now, the name division and in his time are not really specified here, but most of the commentators believe that this is the time when Peleg was born, and his children were growing, is when all of these nations begin to move away, move out in their own languages. And so in his time, that's when the earth was divided and divided into different nations, different tribes and all of that. His brother was named Joktan, and you'll see information about him later also. Yeah, John. There are people that think that also, and I don't know whether that's true or not, but you know, obviously if you look at history, especially Earth history, there's a time when the continents moved apart. I don't know when that time is. Many people say this is when that happened. And maybe it was easier for them to disperse beforehand, Julie. Yeah. Yeah, it comes out, all of it comes out of this one son. But you know, the Hebrew line began to distill as we move forward, you know, into the ascension line, south, you know, from Abraham on down. So a lot of these people we don't know much about. Joktan, father of Almadad, Shelef, Hazmaraveth, I can't pronounce all these, Jerah, Hadaram, Uzal, Dikla, Obal, Abimael, Sheba, that name we've heard before, Ophir, Havilah, and Jobab. All these were the sons of Joktan. Now, the region they lived in stretched from Mesha towards Sephar in the eastern hill country. You can't see this except on a map. So here's the descendants of Shem. And you can see kind of Peleg, and you can see some of these others where you see Abraham in about, I can't read that, 2300 BC. And then out of that is in the line of Messiah. But also in that is Ishmael's line, and Esau's line, but they're not in the Messiah line. They're in a separate line. And Ishmael is the father of the Arabs. And Esau is the father of the Edomites. Edomites, many people believe, are the historical ancestors of the Philistines, not Philistines, Palestinians. I'm not sure that's true, but they were all people of the land. So the Palestinians claim to be people of the land. Of course, they claim to be descendants of the Philistines, and they're not. Descendants of Palestine, they're running DNA, by the way, on a lot of Palestinians, and they're either Egyptian or Arab. They're not, none of them come out of the Mediterranean people's group. So that's just a kind of a ruse they put to give them a right to be in the land longer than the Jews, but it's not really true. So this is the I don't know how to answer that question. I'm your teacher. Keep looking behind me and seeing if there's somebody else over here. God knew what was going to happen. But, you know, in the history of the Bible, when you read the Old Testament, it predicts that the Edomites are going to become like donkeys. You know, nobody wants them. And that's really where the Palestinians are today. You know, Egypt doesn't want them. Jordan doesn't want them. Nobody wants them because they're troublemakers. And so I think, you know, as to why he set it up that way, I don't know, unless it's to make the Jews understand that without him, they would never make it. Because when you look at the history of all these peoples, where are the Hittites? Where are the Kalashites? Where are the Amorites? They're gone. But the Jews are not. The Jews are here. And the Arabs are here. And we sort of have all of it thinning down to, all of them thinning down to a time when we get to the tribulation period, when the Jews are the focus. So other than that's the plan he laid out, I can't tell you why he did it. Because he could, I guess. I don't know. Thank you, Bob, for that question, though. I appreciate it. Yeah, I know. I'll do some work on that, see if I can come up with a better problem.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. So Shem is the father of the Hebrews, the Chaldeans, the Assyrians, the Persians, and not only the Assyrians but the Syrians. So, they're actually different. And also, of course, it's the line of the Jews. It begins with Abraham and comes all the way down through David and down to the Lord. So that's the sign. That's the descendant line for them. I've got all of those. I put them in a chart for you just so you could kind of see them together, and kind of see the countries. But that's really more for study. And Genesis closes, I think closes here, saying these are the sons of Shem by their clans and languages in the territories and nations. These are the clans of Noah's sons according to their lines of descent within their nations, from these nations spread out all over the earth after the flood. So let me put this in a chart for you, which may help. The book of Genesis really lays out this kind of scenario. The yellow is the descendants of Shem, the green is the descendants of Ham, and the pink is the descendants of Japheth. Now, you can see here in certain places, that Hamites, if you will, in Shinar, that's Nimrod. And you can see here's Nineveh up here, also green. You can see some of the things that we had here. Canaan is right over here on the coast. The Canaanites, we know about them. All of this is Japheth. And this is what goes up into Europe. It's what goes west. Or excuse me, whatever that is, east into Asia Minor, India, and all of that. So this is kind of where it comes from. Now, right here, the Persians are a little bit of a mix. They're not Arabs, but they're not Jews either. They're a mix of people. So they're not Arabs. And then you've got Ham over here. And of course, let me just show you. Here's Havilah down here, Ophir, Sheba, and Dedan are down here along the coast. Joab, you can see where all these people settled. Dedan is up here along the coast, up here. This is Arabia, where the Arabs are now, but not in these particular group of them. And then over here you've got Libya, which is Put, or Phut. You've got Egypt, which is Mizrai, or Egypt, Cush, which is Ethiopia, and then on down into the further reaches down here of the Sinai. They have the Sinaites, remember them in the list? Sinai Mountains are there. So these are all the descendants of Noah and the general areas they populated to. So this is an interesting map to look at, especially when you get into later studies in the Old Testament, where they talk about, where people are in Ezekiel, for example, chapters 38 and 39. Yeah.
Did you make a
Yeah, the broad comment is they come out of the Japhites, Japh. Japhethites, they come out of that group. But what's interesting is all of these groups had different characteristics. And certainly when you get over into the area over here where it's the Western Russia or over into China, you see a lot of different characteristics. And those characteristics are not unlike some of these others in Asia Minor, but they're more pronounced. I mean, in India, for example, the Indian people look different than the people in England. Maybe not so much anymore, but they did at one time. And so, all of these are characteristics of the husbands and wives and families and all that came through. There's a whole study by people that are called ethnologists or ethnologists or something like that. But anyway, they study all of the ethnic groups, the languages, the root languages, where they come from. And there's big, thick books written about it. I would tell you most of them, they all have an idea, but none of them know for sure. And I think for most of the commentators, they believe that all those Eastern, the what you'd call the Chinese, like the Asian type, come out of Japheth and some of his descendants. And then the Indians come out of maybe some of these descendants from Ham, and some of these descendants also from Ethiopia, because not from Ham and Shem, because they really didn't all migrate into the other land. These are just big pictures. This is the migration route, if you want to look at it this way. They all started over here around Baghdad. This is Ezekiel 38 and 39, so let me just change it a little bit. All of these tribes started out over here in Mesopotamia. Some of them moved to the east towards what we call Persia. Some of them moved up the Gog and Magog, or Gog is a leader, Magog is a country. And all of these others, Togarmah, the others are really Turkey. A lot of them here in Libya, Ethiopia, all of them migrated down here. So this is the best you can do in terms of mapping the migration of all these sons of Noah. Not an easy thing. I currently can't say, you know, where, although, you know, Toblence, if you know what Toblence is a city in Russia, most of them, they think, came out of Tubal and Jubal, you know, musicians and all that. They're all up through Turkey and on in that area. So a lot of different things. I don't have them all off the tip of my mind. Yeah, John. Move someplace else. Right. I do think it started after the little incident with Noah in the tent. And the incident with Noah in the tent, my guess is the brothers began to move a little further away. And then that started a cascade of their sons and daughters and all that. The what? The migration? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's where it started. You know, but we're given very high level information here. It's not low enough level to take down to the you know, what Bob wants to know. I'll speculate, but I don't know the answer to that. So that's the migration route. And we're going to be out early. You never know about these lessons. But one of the things I'll say is next week we'll go back to Nimrod, and we'll talk about Nimrod and what he tried to do and why it didn't work.
Maybe
and
we could review this next week.
Yeah, we will. We'll absolutely review it. You send me a note on what you want me to talk about next week, and I'll be sure to do that.
You want to set up a remedial class for Tom?
Yeah. Bible 100. Not even 101. So, Genesis 10 is a pivotal chapter. And it's pivotal not because we read it and don't understand it, which it's just genealogies, but it's pivotal in that you see in the later Old Testament verses these countries identified that are all sons and grandsons and great-grandsons of Noah, and where they moved and how they fought and all that. It's just if you think about Genesis being a foundational book, this is one of the only sources, in fact, it's the only one I know of, that gives us an idea of where the countries came from. Now, you know, there's a few questions I can't answer. For example, where did the American Indian come from? I mean, there certainly, if you do the language studies, most of them appear to come over on the land bridge from Asia. But they're different from the ones in Canada, you know, the more Eskimo type of kids. They're different, but they come from different regions, and then they populate down into South America because there's so many traits about them and language roots that are similar, but it's really impossible to know where they all come from. It's one of those things we either accept by faith or we just ignore it and don't answer. Yeah. don't answer the questions. Before we finish with prayer, anybody have any questions? Again, who had a question? Oh, okay.
Does anybody ever figure out how Noah lived 100 years?
Well, yeah, I mean, he was given long life by the Lord. I don't think he, you know, he was the last of that generation that lived 800 or 900 years. You know, after that, after the sons of Noah, you begin to see, I don't have the chart here, but the chart that shows the descent line, and I had the yellow lines on it. I could find it if I needed to get back to it, but it's from last week's or 2 weeks ago. You see the lines are all long, and then when they get down to the chart, they get shorter. They get like 100 years or 90 years or 120 years, which is kind of where we are now. So, you know, when God said, I'm going to shorten man's span on earth to no more than 120 years, you see that in the lineage that's called out in Genesis.
That is one of the biggest vitamins.
Yeah, the Noah vitamins. I'm sure if you look that up online, somebody's selling them. Any other questions I can't answer?
I think he just made bacon, you know. Stayed away from bacon grease.
Yeah, you think that's it? Stayed away from bacon grease? Didn't drink red dye number 40? Probably so. Well, thank you. I'm not sure I could pass the test, honestly.
I think he made up about half of that.
Yeah, yeah. That's what Vicky accuses me of. I don't know. I just make it up. But this is not.
Every son and grandson and great grandson correctly. Yeah. You know.
Oh, I'm sure of that. I'm sure of that.
Sounded right to me.
Well, I appreciate all of your kudos. Let's close with prayer. I think as we think about where we are right now, certainly the U.S., we need prayer for our leaders here, for our country, but for the right decisions, for the Spirit to lead. We need that same for Israel. We need a peace in Jerusalem. We also need one in you know, between Russia and Ukraine. That's a really a hard one. I saw where when that peace deal fell apart the other day, it didn't fall apart, never concluded, that they lost a couple thousand soldiers, you know, that very day, because they're, you know, they're just, they can't fight against the real advanced weapons, especially if people don't give them the real advanced weapons. And I'm not sure Europe can't give them to them. They have to be given by us. And I don't think we're ready to do that, not until they're ready to go to peace. But
just emboldened by what he did.
Yeah, I think, I mean, honestly, I think he believes he's got a stronger hand to play than he does. He doesn't have many cards, as Trump said. He doesn't have many cards to play. But they've been brave, and they've done a great job, and they've resisted far longer than anybody expected them to. And they've earned peace and their own nation. And, you know, they've got to accept kind of where they are. You know, it's just part of the deal. They're never going to get back Crimea and that other part of the land they lost. Not going to get that back. But I don't know whether they're ready to move on. I guess we'll find out. Certainly not only pray for all that situation, but here at home, and pray for our pastors. I know that every day we get closer to this new building, every day we get closer to doing more in-depth Bible study in this area, we're going to get more resistance because, you know, as long as we're Christians that don't bother anybody, a lot of people leave us alone. But the minute we begin to express our faith in public and begin to try to get people to come to the Lord, that's when all of it comes out of the woodwork. And I just pray, I know we're ready. I just pray that we're, you know, ready for the onslaught, because I think it'll happen after we get into the new building. And I just pray for our pastors and staff and all the people that are teaching. I will make one comment. Wendell came to me Wednesday and asked me to mention again in my class, which I'm going to do now, should have done earlier. They're desperate for teachers in this new building. They need teachers. They need to start some new classes. And they're going to have a class on what it means to be a teacher. And whether you're gung-ho to be a teacher, whether you're not, if you're the slightest bit interested to be a teacher or a substitute or whatever for a wider group than maybe in this class, I would encourage you to go to that class. They're going to hold it probably in a couple of weeks. So either let me know or let Wendell know if you're interested in that, because I think it would be good for all of us to kind of get a sense for what it is they're looking for and what it is we need to do to be responsible to use our gifts within the kingdom. I would say we'll probably get a view of our own room probably in a few weeks. I'm looking forward to that, to see what it looks like. Also, you know, we've got all of our friends and family here online. Pray for them. We've got a lot of situations going on, surgeries that we've just gotten through, surgeries we've got to go do, a lot of things that happens. And I'm praying particularly for an outpouring of the Holy Spirit. I pray that our building and our actions here will create an outpouring in our area, and more people will come to know the Lord. And I'm praying that not only here, but everywhere. We're seeing signs of it in a lot of churches and in a lot of colleges, and a lot of youth are coming back to the Lord because the world is so out of touch. And I just pray for that to fill the land, the Holy Spirit, just to use his power to pull people into the Lord. So
you're going to be in our prayer too.
Well, thank you. Well, it's April 3rd. So I got a couple of weeks. Got a couple of weeks to sweat it out. No, it's April 3rd. April 3rd, yeah. No, that's fine. Yeah, thank you. I can use all the prayer. So let's close with prayer, and then we'll get out for the day. Don't forget, if you're interested in this book, there's some back on the table. Lord, we're just thankful to be here. We're thankful that you have given us insight into how this world was formed, how the countries were formed, how the people groups were formed. Lord, even if we don't understand all of it, we do understand where the Semites came from. We do understand where the continent of Africa came from. We do understand where Europe and the Far East came from. Lord, we just ask that you give us peace about that. Help us just to be what you've called us to be. We're not worried about ethnicity, not worry about all that stuff, but simply, Lord, to do what you've called us to do and be who you've called us to be. I pray for the pastor. I pray for the staff. I pray that the sermon you've given him today is a sermon that will be effective and will reach our hearts where it needs to reach us. Lord, I pray for our community. I pray for our church as we reach out every day when church is over and all of our people go back to their homes. Lord, I pray this all in the blessed and holy name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Thank you all. Thank you guys online.
Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
This question, I'll do it later. It's not. Thank you.
No, you can do it now. I shut the recorder off.
Oh, well, I just want to know, Zelensky, if they're not having elections over there, no. Right? Because no. Of the war.
Right.
But is he still in favor? Do the people want him?
I think they want the war to be over.
That's
what he's the guy who's ahead of it.
See, girl.
If he continues, my guess is they will get rid of him, or they'll replace him.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't already.
I'm sure there's a lot of talk about that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
I've talked to him again. Bye-bye.